we're learning this week Parshas Korach. The last section of Parshas Korach is the halachic section, but it's the halachos and the mitzvahs which are taught here in this last section of Parshas Korach are there specifically as a conclusion and a conclusion of the story of Parshas Korach. What we're taught here in the last aliyah, let's just briefly review, is it starts with Nei Levi Hinei Nasati Kol Masar BeYisrael. To the tribe of Levi, I've given the tithes of the Jewish people, L'Nachla as their portion, Chelef Avedasam Asher Heim Evdim Es Avedasa El Mayed, in exchange for the Avoda, for the service which they do, the service of the El Mayed. L'Yichrubu Ad Bnei Yisrael El El Mayed L'Feit Chet Lamus, way the Jewish people will no longer approach the Ohel Moed and bear a sin and die. The Levi will do the work of the Ohel Moed. They will bear the sin. They will bear the responsibility to keep the boundaries about the Ohel Moed. But they don't get a portion. They get no portion like the rest of the Jewish people. Because rather, their nachla, their portion, is Masar B'nai Yisrael, is the tithes of the Jewish people, and so therefore I said, B'soch B'nai Yisrael lo yinchalu nachala. So basically what the verse is saying is that Shevet Levi should have been entitled to get material portion in Eretz Yisrael like everybody else, but they weren't given it. Instead, the Jewish people would give them 10% of what they produced from their land. And that was their portion. So instead of being given real estate to develop, to cultivate, to produce, others produced, and the tax, the tithe from that came to support the B'nai Levi. That's what the verse describes, and this was clearly because this way the B'nai Levi would be able to serve. It goes on and it says that even the Levim, in turn, recognize the role of the Kohanim, and they have to give 10% of their 10% to give what we call Trumas Maser, and that would be their gift to Aaron HaKohen, and again, everybody did what they were supposed to do, and then they would bear no sin. This section, this seventh Aliyah, is a continuation of what came before it, very specifically when it spoke about the gifts which would be given to the Kohanim, which we describe the Matnos Kohuna, the gift of the Kohanim, and which in turn is a continuation of the charge which was given to the Kohanim and the Levim given to help and to assist the Kohanim in their work, which is coming out of the whole Machloikas of Korach V'Hadassah, the whole story of Korach V'Hadassah. When I say coming out of this story, I don't mean that it was invented here, that it was created here. But it was the one of the central points about which Korach and his cohort were arguing with Moshe Rabbeinu. The role of Shevet Levi, the role of the Kohen, their place within the Jewish people. Korach, as you know, was himself a Levi. So his role in this argument is a little unusual. But Korach did not just do this by himself. Korach had partners. He had partners from the tribe of Reuven, Dothan and Aviram, and On Ben Peleth. And Reuven himself is the Bukhar, is the firstborn of the Jewish people. He had partners of the Mosayim, the Chamishim, Makrive HaKtoreth, the 250 people who came and offered the Ktoreth in that face-off, in that test, in that challenge to Aaron HaKohen, where Aaron brought the Ktoreth, and the rest of these people brought their Ktoreth, and we're going to see what will happen. And what ends up happening, of course, is that those people are burned up, they are destroyed, and only Aaron survives. So this, you know, we understand that these were Bechayrim, these 250 were taught that they were Bechayrim, they were firstborn, and they were not quite given up on their role and their place, their original, traditional place where the Bukhar was supposed to have the special role of service in the Mishkan and in the Mikdash. We read just a couple of weeks ago in the Parsha how they counted the Bechayrim and they counted the Leviim and they swapped one out for another, basically 22,000 for 22,000. There were a few extra that had to be addressed. But basically 22,000, Rivavai Salve Yisrael, of the Leviim replaced the 22,000 of the Bechayrim. But they were not completely satisfied with this exchange. And this was one of the points, a central point, of the Machlokes of Korach, of the argument of Korach. Rashi even characterizes when the Pasuk says that that Vayem Hashem al Moshe Hashavis Matei Aron Lisnei Yisus L'Mishmeres Leitzus Nei Meri, go put the staff, which we're going to discuss in a moment, a little bit more about it, we'll go put it in front of the Aron, so that it will be a safeguard as a sign for those who would be rebellious, those who would reject. And this way they won't argue against me in the future, says Rashi, L'zikoren shebacharti ba'aron l'kayen, v'leilenu eidal ha'kohuna. This will be the commemoration that I chose Aaron as my Kohen, because it was the staff of Aaron that we read about that this is referring to, so they won't argue about the Kohuna anymore. This is the point, the central point, it seems, of the debate. Now, the Ramban says, no, hold on, this is not about the Kohuna, this is really about Shevet. They dwell on this, Emir Tashem, again momentarily. But I'm saying this, I'm sort of like maybe just condensing a little bit how we are to see this last section of the Parsha within the flow of the story of the Parsha. The Bnei Yisrael had, through Korach, were resenting and rejecting the choice of Aaron as the Kohen and of Shevet Levi, Aaron Ubanav as the Kohenim and of Shevet Levi. Ask everybody on the phone to please place your phones on mute. Please hit the mute button if possible. So this was a set of the avoda the challenge which was being mounted by Korach, and the demonstration that happens over the parsha of Aaron successfully bringing the Torahs when nobody else did, and then the rod of Shevet Levi representing Levi. This was all to show that these choices were based on something. They were based on the word of Hashem, and to validate the choices so that they would not be challenged again. And so when we finish with that in the Parsha, we actually say, and now we establish the place of the Kohanim, and we establish the place of Shevet Levi, and we actually have the Jewish people pay them, give them their support, give them things which both, you know, affirms the role of Shevet Levi and the acknowledgement of the Jewish people of the role of Shevet Levi. Because if they're giving them tributes, if they're paying them, if they're paying their way, so then they're recognizing the service which they are doing on their behalf. So this creates the framework, the standing framework, where they will actually be there and functioning. So this is the idea that we have here in the Parsha, and I would like to try to approach it in a couple of stages. First, to understand why these gifts that we have here specifically, why are the Shevet Levi, what is exactly wanted in entitling the Shevet Levi to these tithes, to these gifts on behalf of the Bnei Yisrael coming from the Jewish people, and how does that purpose and the way that purpose is expressed, how does that in fact really relate, we'll see hopefully quite directly, to the whole issue of the challenge of Korach v'Adasai, of Korach against Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm going to read you two selections to get us started on this. The first selection comes from a very straight and easy direct source, which is the Sefer HaChinuch, the book of mitzvahs organized according to the parsha, who towards the end of our parsha, mitzvahs of maser and trumas maser min maser, and as is his way, he says something of the shirish, of the root of the mitzvah. We often, I think last week, we also cited from the Sefer Achinuch when we were learning. Mishrashei ha-mitzvah, says the Sefer Achinuch, levisha shevet ha-levi bochar Hashem b'tzeich ha-chov la-vedotzoi tamid b'migdash. Shevet Levi was chosen by Hashem from amongst his brothers to do his work, Hashem's work, consistently in the Mikdash. Al-kein hoya mechazdei aleim losis la-michyasam derech kovay. And therefore, Hashem's kindness to them, so to speak, for their service, was to give them their sustenance in a dignified way. Isn't it fitting for those who are serving the king to be themselves taken care of by others who prepared on their behalf? Be exclusively engaged in the service of the king, in the precious service of the king. Instead of having to worry about their own things and then using whatever energies they have left, whatever energies remain to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, instead, their material needs were being taken care of by others. They didn't have to farm, they didn't have to cultivate and harvest and things. People gave them 10% of their own yield. And therefore, they were able to focus exclusively on the service of the king. He says, it says, it's an interesting thing, if they were one of 12 shvatim, then why should they get 10% of what everybody else produced? They should get 1/12 of what everybody else produced, right? And that way, you know, that would even it out a little bit more. So he says, no. First of all, what? Right. They were much smaller. So he says, this was also lichvaydam. This was also in their respect, because since they're the servants of the Beis HaMelech, they should in fact have higher portion than everybody else. And they really do, because not only do they have 10% instead of 8% or whatever else, but they also have 10% without any expenses to produce it, right? The others have to invest all that money in order to produce it. So this is, you know, the basic idea that we want to be able to give it to them, because they are Meshorsei HaMelech, and this way they're going to be able to be focused more completely on the service of the king. Now, the service of the king, however, as described just by the Sefer HaChinuch, could be simple. You know, if you have someone who's going to be preparing the gourmet meals for the king, and this way he doesn't have to worry about his own food, he'll be able to spend more time crafting the perfect recipe and doing better. The Rambam, however, in a very classic, passage at the very end of the Laz HaShemitah V'Yovel, explains this idea of the Shevet Levi with more than that, more than just saying they should have less distraction from, and therefore be able to dedicate more time and energy, but he views it as something much more fundamental. And listen to me, listen to what the Rambam says. Why did Levi not merit to have a portion in Eretz Yisrael and in the spoils of war together with their brothers? Says the Rambam, because they were set aside to serve Hashem, worship Hashem, to serve Him, and to teach Hashem's upright ways and just laws, L'rabim, to the public. Shenemar, as it says, Yeru mishpatecha li'Yakov v'tzeirascha li'Yisrael. They will teach your laws to Yaakov and your Torahs to Yisrael. L'fikach, therefore, uvdalu midarchei ha'olam. They have been separated from the ways of the world. L'erchen milchama. They don't wage war like the rest of the Jewish people. L'neichlim. They don't get a portion. L'zeichen la'atzman b'kayach gufan. They don't gain their keep by their own physical effort. Elohim Chel Hashem, they are Hashem's force. As it says, Borech Hashem Cheloi, right? Hashem will bless his chayil, his force, and referring to Shevet Levi. And Hashem takes care, therefore, of what their needs are. As it says, Ani Chalkecha V'Nachalascha, I am your portion, I am your inheritance. Says the Rambam, the idea is that Hashem didn't just want to free them up from, you know, dividing their time. He wanted to separate them from Darkei Ha'olam. He wanted to separate them from the material world generally, that they wouldn't be engaged in material pursuit, because what they were really about, what they were trying to do, was they were trying to be in the world of the Spirit. They were serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were teaching his Torah. For that preoccupation in the service of Hashem really requires you, to some degree, to enter a different sphere. And therefore, Shevet Levi, to begin with, wasn't placed in the world of worldly engagements and worldly responsibilities. That was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to engineer. If I can bring a parallel to this, another classic passage which was said by Ramban, both as quoted by Rabbeinu Yonah in his Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah in their commentary on Maseches Brachos, and Ramban even wrote this very briefly, succinctly, to his son in his famous letter, the Yeres HaRamban. And it's codified, it's brought, this statement is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, where it speaks about the value, you know, in the Gemara, in the Mishnah and Brachos, it speaks about the value of a person, Yidim HaRishayin, and the early pious ones who used to be Shaya Shah Achas U'mispalalim. They would have an hour to prepare before they even began to daven. The Gemara asks, what was the purpose of that hour? The Mishnah says, "Kedei shechavenu libam la'mokim," so they could direct their hearts to Hashem. And Rabbeinu Yonah wants to understand what it is, what they're exactly doing here. And he cites from the Ramban that this does not mean that they should be able to concentrate on their tefillah. What it means, he says, then it should say, "Kedei shechavenu libam l'tefillosam," they would focus on their prayers. It doesn't say they will focus on their prayers. It says that they will be able to focus their hearts on Hashem. What does that mean? So the Ramban says that the idea is that they needed time to enter the world of the Spirit. It required them to take some time to remove themselves from the world of the mundane. That Shah Achas, that hour, was a time where they pulled themselves out of the world of material concern, which people generally are living within, which we generally occupy, and they prepared themselves to enter the world of the Spirit, to be in the presence of Hashem. That's what it's about. You have to remove the world from your mind and from your heart before you begin to daven, before you encounter the Ribbono Shel Olam and enter the world of the Spirit. But the Ramban explains, and that's the obligation of the person to do. Again, we're not chayav, we're not obligated to spend an hour each day to do it. We're not early pious ones. The Gemara asks the early pious ones, they would do an hour before they daven. They would daven for an hour. They would do an hour after they daven. That means 9 hours a day davening. When did they get any work done? The Gemara says, because they were chassidim, rishayim, they didn't have to get a lot of work done. Kadosh Baruch Hu took care of them that way. And in a certain sense, as we're going to read in a moment in the Rambam, that's reminiscent of what we're talking about here with this idea of Shevet Levi. Hashem says, for those who are going to be really designated or choosing themselves to serve me, they need to be a little bit out of this world. I'm out of this world. And for them to connect to me, they have to be a little bit out of this world. So the person working regularly has the mandate, as Ramban taught his son, Hoseh, remove the pleasures of this world from your heart before you begin to daven, the matters of this world from your heart before you begin to daven. You move in and out, you move in and out. as we all know, that's easier said than done. Shevet Levi were full-time Avdei Hashem. They were completely dedicated to the service of Hashem. Says the Rambam, they needed to be. Hashem made it that way, that they shouldn't have to be engaged in the world, so that they could be consistently in the world of the spirit and not drawn into the world of the mundane. And the Rambam, and this is one part of the reason why the Rambam is well known and repeatedly cited, is that the Rambam ends by saying, "Lo shevet Levi bilvad elo kol ish veish mikol boi ha'elam." This doesn't only apply to Shevet Levi, but applies to any person in this world, that their spirit moves them, not baruchay eisei ve'evinay madoy, their spirit moves them, that their mind teaches them, v'hibodel, to separate, la'moy l'fnei Hashem, to stand before God, to serve Him, to worship Him, to know Him, la'deya es Hashem, and he goes in the right way as Hashem made man, and he removes from al savorai, from upon his neck, the yoke of the many different considerations of the world that people seek. That person has made themselves holy, and Hashem will be their portion, and he will take care of them and provide them with their material needs. So this Rambam says that the system, which was a very reliable taxation system that was built into the economy of Eretz Yisrael that provided for Shevet Levi, can be replicated without a taxation system, without any formal structure, for a person, for those Hasidim Arishayim, for example, who the Gemara speaks about, that they would spend 9 hours a day davening, and Hashem would say, you want to be so much in my world, I'll make it easy for you, and I'll take care that you don't have to spend much time being preoccupied with the matters of this world. And says the Rambam, that applies to any human being. Very interesting, not just any Jew, he says. Any human being who wants to dedicate their life to the service and the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem will, quote-unquote, provide them with Maaser. But here, it's more miraculous. In the case of Shevet Levi, it was built into the system. And it had to be something which was not only more natural, but something, we would suggest, with which the Jewish people had to recognize, to participate, to say, we want Shevet Levi. We want Shevet Levi. We're going to do this so that there will be a Shevet Levi, so that they won't have to do it. Hashem relied on the miracles for the future, where it would be an undefined group, but for Shevet Levi, especially on the heels of the story of Korach, where the Jewish people were challenging the notion that such an institution, such a group, was necessary. So we were told to be part of the solution of having Shevet Levi being able to be separate from the world and serving Hashem. And my question to you, and this is now the second phase of our discussion, so the first phase was demonstrating what these gifts were about. I said, okay, so then our second phase is, so how does this come as the completion, the fulfillment of this story of Korach? This particular matter, in fact, this particular point, seems to come as a completion and a fulfillment of the story of Korach. Let's try to look at the story a little bit broadly now that we've seen what this Shevet Levi, what the Trumas are about, and what we're after with the Shevet Levi. Let's try to look a little bit more closely at this machlokas. We're not going to start from the beginning, we'll start from the middle, and then we're going to go back to the beginning. As we alluded in our introduction to what we're talking about here today, the story of Korach goes through many different phases, many different consequences. The Ketoret, the swallowing up of Korach by the ground, subsequent arguments, the staff of Aaron being put the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that it would grow and it would flourish. The Ramban explains, in Perek Yudzayin Pasuk Vav, when the Jewish people, after the story of the 250 being burnt up and Korach being swallowed up, so they complained, Vayiloinu kol adas neisil mimrochas al meishav Aaron leimar atem amitem etzam Hashem, you have caused the Jewish people to die. So again, frustration, and Hashem wants to destroy them, and so on and so forth, and they are spared. But then what happens is that they're spared, and Hashem says, okay, take the staffs of the various tribes and write the name of the leader of each tribe on the staff, and we'll see what happens. So the Ramban explains, Hanochim be'enai, what seems correct to me, Shoyuam aminim ata bekunas arein, the people believed at this point in the kohuna, in the priesthood of Aaron, shekvar yotzei shmei mufnei Hashem atechot karbonaisa, because they already saw through the ketores test that of all the people, the fire came from Hashem to consume Aaron's ketores positively and to destroy everybody else, period. So therefore, that was a pretty good affirmation of the choice of Aaron. Aval hayu chafetim shiyu habecheres mesharsei ha-mishkan b'mkhaim ha-leviim. But what they wanted here was that instead of Shevet Levi being the generalized tribe, right? Kohanim were a very specific group, especially at this early stage in the development of the family. It was just Aaron and his sons. That's all that it was. But the rest of Shevet Levi were the Leviim. They did the general Mishkan. And they were saying, we don't want that. We understand that there's going to be these super MVPs, MVPs, most valuable priests, right, who are going to be doing the avoda, that was going to be Aaron Ubanav. But in terms of everybody else, the broader cast of the servants of Hashem, why did you switch from the Bechayrim to the Leviim? Why did you switch from the firstborn? Remember, that's Reuven's advocacy, as Rishonim explained. That's the 250 men. They resisted the exchange which was done. They wanted all of the Shvatim to have a portion in the service in the Beis HaMikdash. So he says, and that was their chachma now. They said, you know, you got us in trouble, because you had all those 250 men try to bring Torah to pretend to be Aaron. We understand they weren't supposed to be Aaron. So that's why they would be burned out by the Torah. What you should have said to them was, be Leviim. Now they're not Leviim, they were Bechayrim. But as Bechayrim, they would be able to be in the role which later became the role of the Leviim. And therefore, that's why they were saying, you caused this problem by trying to get them to pretend to be Kohanim. We understand they can't be Kohanim, but why can't they be Leviim? That's why what follows up is where all of the tribes put in their staffs, and Aaron put in this tribe not for himself, but for Shevet Levi, on behalf of Shevet Levi, and the staff of Shevet Levi, the staff of Aaron, which was for on behalf of Shevet Levi, that flourished, that developed, and that showed that Levi had to be chosen. This is the way the Ramban explains this piece, this twist. So again, we understand that the conflict is, should it be just one family that has this right of service? Or should it be the Bechayrim, in the words of the Ramban, Yu l'chol ha-shvatim chelek v'avedas Beis Hashem. Let all of the Shvatim have a portion in the service of the Beis HaMikdash. Award of this task to Shevet Levi, Chazal tell us, it's not explicit in the Pasuk, but it goes back to Shevet Levi's excellent performance at the time of the Egel Hazav, when everybody else sinned. And we see that because the Bechayre B'nai Yisrael, along with the rest of B'nai Yisrael, participated in that terrible activity, and Levi did not, and Levi, you know, stood up, Mil Hashem Elai. So therefore, Shevet Levi was given their special privilege, while everybody else lost theirs. That is correct. That's when it happened. That's how it happened. That's why it happened. But Korach was not accepting it, and Korach Hadassah, this group, was not necessarily accepting such a major radical change, that this should become a permanent fixture, a permanent change for the Jewish people. Let's try to just see and explain a little bit more. And this, yes, it's exactly that story and that lesson, but it comes across in the story of Korach specifically? What's the idea? Now, Korach said, Korach's basic complaint against Moshe, again Aaron originally, was this whole community, we are all holy, and Hashem is in our midst. Why do you lift yourself up over the community of Hashem? Why do you make yourself different? Why do you make yourself special? Rashi brings there, everybody heard at Har Sinai, Anoichi Hashem Alekecha. We all heard the Aseret Hadibros. We're all prophets. Why do you consider yourself unique? Why do you consider yourself different? That was the complaint. Why are you setting yourself aside from the Jewish people? This way, of course, it's reminiscent of an earlier complaint that we read in the Parsha 2 weeks ago, in the last section of the Parsha, which was the complaint of Miriam and Aaron against Moshe. They weren't arguing about them being the same as the masses of the Jewish people, but they said, "Harakach b'Moshe diber Hashem alegam bonu diber." Did Hashem only speak to Moshe? He spoke to us too. We're also Nevi'im. We don't do what Moshe Rabbeinu thinks that he has to do. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu seeing himself as different? Which, of course, Hashem responded to and said, "You ain't Moshe Rabbeinu. You're not Moshe Rabbeinu. I know Moshe Rabbeinu, and you're not Moshe Rabbeinu." Right? They said that the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu is unique. This becomes, it's articulated there at the end of Parshas Baloischa, one of the 13 principles of faith, which we sing and we chant in Yigdal, Lo kam bi Yisrael kemoshe od navi umavit es temunaso, which is paraphrasing the verse found at the end of the Torah, where this principle is reaffirmed in the last verses of the Torah, that there's no prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is different than everybody else. And Korach, the Adosai, were challenging the notion of them really being different than everybody else. And we've discussed this in the past, and it's well known that this objection took the form of a couple of specific questions which Chazal attribute to Korach when they see it specifically, the juxtaposition of the last section of last week's Parsha, the Parsha of Tzitzis, with Parsha's Korach. And they say that Korach appeared before Moshe Rabbeinu, or this group appeared before Moshe Rabbeinu, and they were wearing talisos, talesim, that were all tcheles. They were made completely out of blue wool. And they asked the Shaila, they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, tell me something. Does this talis need tzitzis? Talis white. Will need a single blue strand, I understand, but that would mean that a talis, which is all blue, certainly shouldn't need anything. And then they asked him, a house that's filled with sforim, does it need a mezuzah? In both cases, what's the answer? Yes, this needs a mezuzah. That was the response. That was what was supposed to be. Korach didn't understand it, and that's sort of like a symbolic dispute about this point. Is there a need for something special, separate and apart, when the whole thing is holy? That was what Korach's argument was. The whole thing is holy. We don't need something special. We understand that expresses itself right here in this argument against Shevet Levi. We can have Bechairim throughout the Jewish people. It will be a nation filled with Kohanim. Why do we need to have set apart a separate group of Kohanim? It wasn't just a challenge to Moshe Rabbeinu, but it was a challenge to the notion of an isolated priesthood, an isolated Kohuna that would be set aside and set apart from the rest of the Jewish people. I want to learn with you a short passage from the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin. Not pleasant. It tells us part of the story that happened here between Korach v'Adoso, but their issues which they had with Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a little shocking. It's a little surprising. But at the same time, it's important for our fuller understanding of the story and relates directly to what we're talking about here. Gemara says an interesting thing. Gemara starts actually on the bottom of Kuftes Amud Beis, where the Gemara says that Ayn ben Peles, Amar Rav, Ayn ben Peles Ishta Yitzilosai. Ayn ben Peles was saved by his wife. The idea is that in the first verse of the Parsha, amongst the conspirators, we have Korach, Dothan and Aviram, and we have Ayn ben Peles. Korach, Dothan and Aviram were swallowed up by the earth. The 250 men that are described in the next verse were burnt up by the Ktaris. Ayn ben Peles, we never hear him getting in trouble. We describe him making trouble, but he never seems to face the music. What happened? So the Gemara says his wife saved him. How did his wife save him? Omar Leh, first of all, she argued with him logically. She says, "My nafka lachmina, anyway, you're just the second fiddle over here. Whether you're going to be second fiddle to Moshe, you're going to be second fiddle to Korach, it won't make a difference. You're not going to be the top banana anyway. Live with it." So Omar Leh, my avid, she says, "But what am I supposed to do? I was part of the group. I gave my word. How do I get out of this now?" She says, "I know this is a very holy group of people. As it says, what they were arguing was that they were a very holy people. Hashem was in their midst. So therefore they maintain high standards. So, Tuv, Dano Metzumalach, you sit here, I'll save you. You just follow my direction." What did she do? Ashkise Chamra Varvise, Vagnise Gavoy. Gave him a good lunch. She gave him a 3-martini lunch. She gave him some wine to drink. He fell asleep, and she put him to bed inside the tent. Then what did she do? Aishve albova visasrasa lamazia. She went and she sat by the door of the tent, off for hair covering. Olda asa chazia, father. Anybody came and said, "Hey, what was that? Let's get Own. Where's Own?" And they say, "You go to Own's house. Go pick him up. He's missing the game." They approach Own's house, they see his wife sitting out there with her hair uncovered, they turned around and ran in the opposite direction, one after the other. Okay, these are the Rishoyim of the Jewish people. Okay, this is Korach Vadosai. They saw that and they ran in the opposite direction. And she was sure that that was what they were going to do. This was the way she was, her plan was to save her husband because this is a holy group. So in the interim, while they were all, they couldn't get a chance, Korach was swallowed up. Adachi vachi ivluluhu. In the meantime, they were swallowed up. The Gemara goes on to say, Ayn ben Peles was lucky. He had a wonderful wife. The wife of Korach was the one who stirred him up and got him in trouble. Right? So you never know. It can go either way. Says the Gemara, "Vayakumu lifnei Moshe." Excuse me. So the Gemara goes on and it says, "Vayishma Moshe vayipel al panav." And Moshe Rabbeinu heard, and he fell on his face, devastated. Says the Gemara, "Mashmu Hashama." What did he devastated him so much? Now you would say, "Himself were enough." You know, they were accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of nepotism, of making things up. Says the Gemara, but his reaction was very drastic. What upset him so? They suspected him of adultery. And he brings a pasuk in Tehillim Kovav, which is one of those long psalms which sort of gives a snapshot of the story of the Jewish people. In the middle, we have a few such Pesach Tehillim, and it says they were mekane, they were zealous against Moshe in the camp. And the term vayikane can be found in a halachic context in the story of Saita, where a man will warn his wife against being alone with somebody. That's the same term which is used. Hine es ishtai. He warns his wife with a sense of possessiveness, a sense of jealousy. Says the Gemara, that's what they did about Moshe. They told them, don't go near Moshe. What's the idea? Because it says that Moshe Rabbeinu took his tent, he put it outside of the machane. So what's the idea? What's the idea? So Rashi says that he said, I'm going to take my tent outside of the camp so that they won't suspect me anymore. However, not differently, but in addition, the Marshal says, and explain this more, what does that mean, that they suspected and they accused Moshe Rabbeinu of doing this? So it says, Shapirish Mina Isha, says the Marsha. Moshe Rabbeinu separated from his wife, he were based on what Hashem had told him to. And the cynics said, she actually Yehud Isha Lisha Lifresh Mina Isha. How could it be? How is he living a life like that? Right? He's just going to choose abstinence. They didn't believe it. They thought it was a show. And therefore, the Darshu came in the Chsiva, Yikadu L'Moshe B'machana, the Mashma Kozvan Shei B'machana, Kinu L'Shemeshu, Seim Hashanota L'Nichutz L'Machana. So you guess the idea was, as long as Moshe Rabbeinu was there in the camp, they were worried about him being around. They didn't believe that he would really separate successfully from the world in this way. And therefore, they were chayshed. They suspected him that he's presenting himself this way, but it's not a reality. And therefore, they warned their wives, be careful about Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, that's an accusation, which when Moshe Rabbeinu hears it, he collapses, he falls on his face, devastated, but that's what they're thinking about him. What's the pshat? What is the meaning of this? They just made this up? Well, of course it wasn't true about Moshe Rabbeinu. But how does this accusation fit into the whole story? Well, if you think about it, it fits in perfectly and elegantly. Because, as we said, Korach was saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, why do you think you're different than everybody else? Why do we have to have a mezuzah? Why can't it just be the holiness of everybody, and that's going to be good enough? We don't have to have something or someone who's separate and apart from anybody else. And, as we said, her argument was reminiscent of the argument of Miriam against Moshe. And what was Miriam's argument against Moshe? It was about exactly this point, that Moshe Rabbeinu separated from his wife and said, we have prophecy and we don't have to do those kinds of things. So they had issue with this. The way Korach addressed it was, they said, there's no value to this, there's nothing special, there's no extra holiness about this, so we don't even believe that necessarily it's real. The whole thing may be a fallacy. But of course it was real. It was real. And it went to the essential core of what Bal Yisrael had to learn here, had to understand here, what Korach had to understand, like what Miriam had to understand, which is, yes, of course we have a mass, we have a full community of the Jewish people. And yes, everybody in the Jewish people is holy. Everybody has holiness. We have many Nevi'im, we have many prophets, and they're all successfully communicating to us, on some level, the word of Hashem. But that doesn't mean that there isn't something even higher than that, than the Kedusha of the Jewish people as a whole. it doesn't mean that there isn't something higher than the words of a regular Navi. Not that anybody or that everybody could have it or should have it. But just because the house is filled with Svarim doesn't mean that there isn't a special role for a wound-up special piece of parchment to be there at the front door. Doesn't mean that there isn't a value for the psil tchelet, for the thread that distinguishes itself from the rest of the garment. Yes, kol ha'eda kulam kedushim. And it's nice that there's kedusha amongst the Jewish people generally. There needs to be. Maybe we learned it there, specifically at that difficult story of the Maaseh Ha'egel. Story of the Maaseh Ha'egel, where we had told Moshe Rabbeinu, you go up to Har Sinai. Then we said, uh-oh, Moshe Rabbeinu was going to go. Again, that was our choice. We sent him up there. We said, we're not all going to hear the word of Hashem, even though we have previously. So you hear Hashem on behalf of all of us and come back and bring it to us. But then Moshe Rabbeinu's gone. I think that Moshe Rabbeinu has gone and is not returning. So they say, okay, so now we're going to take over. We're going to have this broad kedusha in the Jewish people. Where we go, we end up with the Tov. We need to have something special, something designated. The Egel Hazav, when the Bechayrim lost, when they forfeited their role as the Kayanim, it's because they weren't living removed from the Jewish people. The Bechar was part of the family, with a family nachla, with a family piece of real estate, with a family business. He was part of that. And that he should be able to somehow dabble in Kedusha, in sanctity, it wasn't sufficient. But Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted, as the Rambam said, for this group to on some level be separate and apart. That would be the way Kedusha would be able to be founded within the Jewish people. We try very hard, we work to integrate sanctity into the world of the mundane. We work very hard so that when a person goes and they're involved in world activities, but they still do it as a holy people. Our efforts are preceded, followed, and infused with prayer, recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. We try to do things according to the Torah, which we have learned, so that there's almost like a seamless transition from our world of religiosity to our engagement with the material world. That's all within the realm of our goals. But to be there, we need a mezuzah. And immediately surrounding that the Levium lived. Which person? One side. Baruch Hashem, we have some people who are there who are pure, who are completely dedicated to the service of Hashem, and they will serve to some degree as my conscience. They will serve as our safe, guardians of holiness and integrity, because they're completely not drawn into the world of the confusion between the material engagements and otherwise. And we're fortunate to have them. And we're going to do what we can in order to make sure that we have such a group. We're going to support it with maaser, with our tithes, because that way they will do us the great favor of remaining apart from the world so that they will be our conscience. They will safeguard holiness for the rest of us. That's one possible attitude. Another possible attitude is, I don't get it. Why do they have to do that? I get up in the morning, I go to Davin, I learn, and then I go to work. And I after that, and I take a break in the middle of the day, and I Davin again, and maybe I learn, and maybe I listen to a shir on the way back. If it's good enough for me, why isn't it good enough for them? That's the difference between what Korach was saying, the latter, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to say, which was the former. In of Maaser, we give to the Levian, which we discuss here at the end of the Parsha, is to say, Klal Yisrael, realize, guys, you should be sniping at, wondering why they have to be so holy and holy rollers or whatever you call it. They're providing you, the Jewish people, with a service. We didn't have this group of holy people who were doing that, we might not be davening. We might not be taking that time. Having that mezuzah, having that purity, that provides anchor of the conscience for the rest of us to make sure we are hewing to a line, that we are sticking to something. We're somehow remaining connected. Israel has had these kinds of representatives throughout our history, where the Gemara says, some of you perhaps have been with us on Shabbos afternoon, when we've been talking a little bit about the challenges, the ethics of money, of making it and spending it. And we talked about the debate, the famous debate between Rav Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel, which is found in the sixth parak of Maseches Brachos. Rav Shimon bar Yochai, where Rabbi Shmuel said, "Yosafta deganecha, you do the mitzvahs of Hashem and you learn Torah and you got gather in your crops. You have to hanigven minig derechet. You have to work for a living and you have to study Torah. You have to do both of them together." And Rav Shimon bar Yochai said, the work is going to be calling you at this season to do harvesting, and this season to do plowing, and this season to do planting. You're not going to be able to study Torah. So just throw yourself into the study of Torah, and your parnasa will be taken care of. Essentially, these words of the Rambam that we quoted from the end of the Laws of Shemitah v'Yovel. So which one is the right thing? Says the Gemara, many did like Rabbi Shmuel and were successful. Many did like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and were not successful. Which is a funny way for the Gemara to make its conclusion. It doesn't say the halacha is like this one or the halacha is like that one. It's just a sort of like an editorial comment. Many did like this and were successful. Many did like this and were not successful. Both Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner and the Chafetz Chaim, they said the same thing on this Gemara. They said the Gemara said that because what it was saying was, for the masses, you need to do like Rabbi Shmuel. Masses are not ready to undertake a world of self-sacrifice of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. The masses are not ready to live in a cave for 12 years, subsisting on buckshorn and water. They can't subsist on buckshorn and water for 12 hours. Rav Shimon bar Yochai didn't just say, I'm not going to work, I'm going to wait for God to send me packages. Shimon bar Yochai said, I don't want to have anything to do with the world of material pursuit. Just want to be, the only thing that matters to me is the world of the spirit. I'm not the chassid who's going to take an hour to break myself from the world so I can concentrate on godly things when I daven. I want that to be my whole life. Most people can't do that. Some people can. Some people must. Because those some people, the rest of us honest. The rest of us with something to strive for. Ooh, they bring into the Jewish people a level of strong, sort of the spirit. But while it isn't ours, exactly, but nevertheless it gives us something to aspire to. You know how it is, how the Jewish people, whether Hasidim or Misnagdim, have always celebrated their greats. You know, and sometimes people say, ah, it's not so good. Spiritual heroes. I can't be that way. I can't be that way. So just hearing these stories makes me depressed. Others say, can't be that way. Hearing those stories gives me something to aspire. Having, like the Chafetz Chaim, I can't do the Mesiras Nefesh for chesed of this great person or that great person. I can't do that. It does inspire me to be more considerate around me in my life. Try a little bit harder to daven a little bit better, to study a little bit more. It's for me, it's holy people. Because it's not you. Derided the need for it. Won't be the same. Nobody could be that way. What Moshe Rabbeinu separates from his wife, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Normalcy, there's no such thing as turbo spirituality. It can't be real. It's not for everybody. Everybody needs. Our recognition, we need Shevet Levi. Cool. If we wouldn't pay for it, they were going to go and dedicate their lives this way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would take care of them then, like he took care of them now, takes care of them now. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I want them to pay for it. I want them to recognize that they need. Even though they're working and they're getting their hands dirty, they should thank goodness. Hope that's not maintaining the spirit, maintaining an integrity of the service of Hashem removed from this world, serve as an anchor and a benchmark for all of the rest. We don't have a designated Shevet Levi, but we have, well, Hashem, many, many people, many, many people who, well, their spirituality astounds us and inspires us, who live in a world of the spirit that's different than us. I listen sometimes, just last night I was listening to a talk from someone from Eretz Yisrael, just like me, and you know, he started off here, but he's now in Eretz Yisrael, and I could never say that kind of thing here. It's like what's normal for them, for him, is not normal for me. It's not normal. It's not something I would share. People wouldn't connect. People wouldn't relate to it. They wouldn't understand it. On the other hand, gosh, it's raising. The way higher, something greater, and it's Baruch Hashem. It's there. It's there. Many. Hashem, to see a real Shevet Levi restored, and to see all of us together, surrounding them and